Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we're offering 6 conversations from episode 7, where we join 5 leading North American patient advocates to celebrate the approval of Rezdiffra on March 14th, 2024, and to discuss some implications for patients and other stakeholders. Louise Campbell starts this conversation by saying she is, and I quote, slightly fed up, end of quote, with the idea we cannot proceed too quickly to diagnose and treat patients for fear of overwhelming the system. Louise believes that we should flip the focus to push systems to build the capacity they will need to handle the flow of patients that will certainly grow over time. Mike Patel agrees and discusses 2 Fatty Liver Alliance activities in Canada, one of which is a survey of 27,000 primary care physicians. I push back slightly on Louise's comment about overwhelming the system. Building capacity may be easier, I suggest, in countries with government-run healthcare systems, where one group can make and implement national decisions, than it would be in the fragmented private U.S. system where so many things are measured in terms of short-term profit. Jeff McIntyre agrees with Louise's point in that we can't think of, and I quote, don't burden the provider anymore, unquote. He then discusses an innovative solution the U.S. Veterans Administration is implementing around this set of issues. Louise points to the importance of system solution in view of her belief that 5 to 7 years from now, most patients with Mazel will be managed in primary care, which stresses the importance of both systems enhancement and growing the population of advanced providers to help these primary care physicians. In episodes 6 and 7, we have now spoken to 2 of the groups most directly engaged in activities leading to and emanating from the Rezdiffra approval. This group of patient advocates is energized, optimistic, and brimming with new ideas. So just sit back, listen, enjoy, learn, and when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group.
Louise Campbell.
I get slightly fed up with the excuse that people give of overwhelming the system. We would have to change the system very drastically, very quickly to overwhelm it. What we need to do is start pushing the needle to build the capacity in the system. And then the health services respond to need. If there is no need, I have no reason to apply for an increased budget. If I have no need driving my service, it is a threat. Our services are taken up with 94% of people who referred with abnormal liver function tests, who we refer straight back to primary care when they get non-invasive testing like FibroScan. They are blocking the system and preventing capacity. So we need to reframe. Is it that we're scared of overwhelming the system, or is that just an obstruction to not building capacity into the system to account for changes in liver disease care and adding associates, adding more nurse specialists? So I think we really need to reframe a few of the questions, and we need to ask ourselves, why are we using overwhelming the system? Because that would take a number of years to do, and we've got a number of years then to adapt our system not to be overwhelmed. It's one of the reasons that I left, to build a service that provides direct into the system with a better level of knowledge and diagnosis and early access to non-invasive treatments, because we do not have the capacity in any country that I've seen so far to give non-invasive tests, whether it's ultrasound elastography, 2D shear wave, whether it's PET scan, MRI, PDFF. We don't have that capacity in any location.
Mike Patel.
Okay. Well, I wanted to follow up on Louise's point that she just made and to give 2 other examples. So although we do have educational events for patients who already know that they have mast cell to mast that are almost finished and ready to launch, 3 other areas are we're going to be actually doing, Louise, market research across Canada, almost 27,000 primary care physicians, to find out what challenges they're having with regard to access to non-invasive testing. Yeah, it's going to be really, really big. So it's just going through ethics right now. And so that's one big one. For Global Fatty Liver Day that's coming up on June 13th, Jeff, we're actually doing a in-community educational event. So we are talking to patients directly, educating them and offering FibroScan assessments, liver health assessments also. There was a liver conference in Canada, and we actually had a FibroScan assessment done and did 104 scans. So we put that data together, and we're going to be sharing that as well. But the point is, we were trying to educate GIs, because it was a liver conference, general liver conference, on what a FibroScan even is and why it's important to assess. And some of them had never even seen one before. So that's why it's important to educate sort of all aspects for liver care.
Roger Green.
I think that makes sense. Here's my controversial moment. Louise, I want to come back at what you just said, which is that in the
In governmentally run health systems, the decision to invest is made in the public good. In the States, it doesn't work that way. So right now, we're not going to get more doctors or more anything simply because we know there's a need until people can figure out how to manage the economics of the need. You heard this from Naeem a couple of weeks ago. We heard a little bit from Zobair on Friday. Where this need is primary care doesn't have time to integrate this into what they're doing right now and don't know how. So once we step outside the 315 patients or maybe the 500,000 patients that are one level out from there, we get to a place where we have to rely on non-specialists or non-gastro heps even to do a significant amount of screening and frontline treatment. They don't have the schedule, they don't have the budget, they don't have the training. And unlike K or Canada, where maybe your resources are scarcer, but if you decide it's what you want to do, you can get it done. Here, there's no obvious way to do that. So when people talk about overwhelming the system, I think that's a different phenomenon in the States than it is in other countries. But it's going to be a tougher one to deal with here because the roadblocks are more and differently entrenched. Jeff, do I have that right? I see you nodding.
Jeff McIntyre.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because it takes me back to COVID. I mean, that was in the U.S., that was why everybody, aside of spread of transmission, but that was one of the factors cited with COVID was everyone stay home because we were overwhelming the system at that point. And the hospitals were overwhelmed and, you know, the care was overwhelmed. Granted, this is a little bit different, but I think for me, Louise's point is well taken because we tend to get kind of locked into a mentality of don't burden the healthcare provider anymore. And I would hate for that to be, you know, the case in this because we do need to figure out solutions so healthcare providers can step up in a way. And one of the populations that's been left out of the conversation in this on the American side has been U.S. veterans and the Veterans Administration. And we know, for instance, one of the places that we can make an improvement is getting what's called a smart phrase. It's part of their EHR, but getting that put into their electronic system. So now we can treat the veteran, engage the veteran system as well. And in doing so, you know, I think we kind of feed two birds with one stone, one seed here, if you will, which is that, you know, we're able to enlarge the capacity of the healthcare system because now we've brought the VA in intentionally. And this is from patient advocacy. We've done this, brought the VA in, worked with them to be able to include that population. Obviously, we've got private insurance we need to work with. We know often in the U.S. they'll follow Medicare and Medicaid. Then we also will have the individual states we can work with. So there is a ton of work to be done here still, which we have been held up from doing because we haven't had a medication that's been approved from the FDA.
Right.
So now we can start all that sort of stuff. And hopefully by the time that we get to implementation of a lot of those things that we need with the VA and state Medicaid and all these other things, we will have begun to get another medication through the system. We will begin to be able to look at maybe we can talk about off-label stuff. We will begin to have other things that can be brought into the picture to continue to grow this exponentially.
I think to bring it back to your original questions about these timelines and the F2s and F3s, we are going to see Rezdiffra being treated in primary care in the next 5 to 7 years. These patients will not come into liver specialists, and therefore we won't have grown a system to get to the right patients, but we will. But primary care will look after these patients very, very well because they are seeing them. They just don't know they're seeing them. They don't have the data or the non-invasive access to be able to manage them in the way that we would like them to be managed. But there was a very interesting point Jeff said there. COVID. Who was most affected in COVID? People with cardiometabolic conditions and statistically those with fatty liver disease. If we remove F2, F3 fibrosis and improve the liver fat, we know that excess liver fat tripled your risk of mortality and severity. So therefore, preparing the nation in any nation for a future pandemic or issues, because we had warning signs, we had H1N1, we had MERS, and we had SARS, all affecting the same population. So maybe we're preventing a pandemic issue. We're treating one pandemic to prevent another one. So I quite like Jeff's thing on COVID.
I reacted to the COVID thing in a slightly different way. I liked it also, but extreme demand on places in the medical system that were a lot smaller and couldn't handle it. And frankly, for that kind of thing, there's no way to short circuit getting to an ER, an emergency department, unless you've got vaccines that people want to take. Here, Ken Cousy has been talking forever about the idea that the best thing we could do is get everybody checking a diabetic patient to add a liver check once a year, the same way you check kidneys, check eyes, right? That would bring primary care into the game, Louise. Louise, in the way that you're describing, which is they could then, if a patient turned out to have fibrosis, they could treat them as part of the integrated diabetes care, or endocrinology could do. I think that's the kind of thing that has to happen, number one. And the other thing that has to happen, I was interested in what Jeff said, because too often people kind of look down their nose in the private systems at the VA as a source of innovation because of who the patients are and because of where the funding is. But here, the VA could be an amazingly rich source of innovation. I mean, I know I tried to get somebody from the VA to do something with us last week, and he couldn't because they were spending all their time trying to figure out what to do with the new Wegovy indication. And what could they do to go back into their records to identify patients who were now Wegovy candidates and where the economics were going to support doing that? So that's not so different from this, right? It's obesity to heart instead of liver to heart and liver to other things, but not so different.
And now back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's topic, but it will be a good one. All the options are great. Until then, stay safe, surf on, see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.